Okay, we're rolling. This is Lynn Downey. I am interviewing the already delightful Jim and Dixie Custer in their lovely home in Congress, Arizona. And today is Thursday, April 21st. Good morning.
21st, yes.
Morning.
Good morning.
Well, I want to start with the basics back at the beginning. If you could each tell me, you know, where you were born, where you grew up, where you went to school.
I was born in Prescott, right up the road. I went to school in Prescott, and then my dad ran a ranch outside of Williams, Arizona, between the Grand Canyon and Williams, Arizona. So my rest of my schooling was in Williams. We would go to the ranch at weekends and had a house in town. So, yeah.
Oh.
That's where I was raised.
How about you, Jim?
My family came from Texas and New Mexico. My dad grew up on a ranch in New Mexico near Belen, at a little place east of Belen there. And then my dad, when he got old enough, he came to Phoenix and applied for a job at the fire department and got on and was working at fire station number one when Pearl Harbor got bombed.
Mm-hmm.
So he joined the Coast Guard as a fireboat
captain.
Too. And then after the war, we moved to Prescott.
Wow.
Moved to Prescott.
Wow. Where, so did you two meet in Prescott?
No.
Oh,
we didn't even know each other.
We met in Flagstaff.
We met in Flagstaff. I was living in Williams.
I was going to college there.
And I was still in high school. Jim's 8 years older than me, so... You know, we might have lived, I mean, we were in Prescott at the same time, but that doesn't mean we knew each other, because I was just a punk kid, and he was a hotshot sweetheart, you know.
I can't say it.
So you went to school in Prescott, and you did as well, and then you
yes.
went to college?
At NAU.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was on the rodeo team at NAU when she used to come up there to... Different
yeah,
rodeo events,
and
we met there.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
That was, let's see, before the turn
before,
of the century.
Before Christ.
No, well,
it was 51 years. We've been married 51 years, going on 52.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
So,
yeah.
Wow. Well, what drew you both to rodeo? How did you each get into rodeo?
I was, my dad rodeoed. My dad was a bronc rider and you know, cowboy, and
oh, cool.
I was virtually raised on a ranch, so everything to me was horses.
What was your dad's name?
Dick Tatum.
Okay.
He actually has a book. I'm going to talk to the museum about putting the book in there.
Oh, good
so
idea.
I've got it published now, so it's really a keen book. And it talks about Walnut Grove, where he was raised at the Carter Place and everything, so they should be interested in it.
I'd like to read that.
Yeah, I'll get you a copy before you leave.
Thank you.
I'll give you a copy of Jim's album, too. Jim's also a country gospel singer, and he got to go to Nashville and do two albums with Garth Brooks' band, not Garth, but with his studio band, which is the best.
It's still pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a good album, so make sure you have that, too. I don't know
Thank
if this
you.
Is supposed
Thank
to be
you.
On here or not.
Okay. So you grew up on a ranch, so, you know, living on a horse and rodeoing was part of
everything
you did.
Yeah, virtually.
And how about you, Jim?
Well, I just wanted to do the wildest thing I could think of, and that was riding bulls. And I did that for a few years and never really went anywhere, but I sure enjoyed myself.
Yeah.
Got to work on a couple of movies as a stunt writer. And
series. And
oh, which ones? Tell me.
One of them's called The Rounders with Henry Fonda and
Glenn
Ford. I and a friend of mine, Cal Baird, he used to rodeo together, and we got hooked up with the stock contractor, and we got in to ride bulls in that movie. So that's nothing more than just a conversation piece.
Yeah. And then Stay Away Joe with Elvis Presley, that was one. And by that time, Jim had quit riding bulls a little bit, and they called him and said, we need you to come ride some bulls. And Jim said, I quit riding bulls. And they said, all you have to do is just buck off. Jim said, I'll be there tomorrow.
I could do that always.
Yeah, and then he got to work on the Monroe series, a TV series called The Monroes with Ben Johnson. who became one of our dearest friends. Oh. Ben was one of our sweetest friends.
Wow.
But Jim got to work on that, and Jackson. That was fun for us, too. We were married by then. The other two movies, we weren't married.
We
were, because I was in the crowd for the Stay Away Joe, but
yeah.
I'm sure they didn't get me. And I didn't get to meet Elvis, either, because he wasn't on the scene.
Yeah, those things, you don't always get to meet the star. You meet his stunt double, maybe.
Yeah, or two or three of them, even.
Yeah.
That's the same way.
But,
how did you
I had a lot of fun with it, and as far as making a career out of it, the closest I came to was team roping.
Yeah.
And I started team roping after I quit riding bulls.
Huh.
Yeah.
You know, I'm only you hear a lot about team roping now, and when I was growing up with my cousins in the rodeo, I don't even remember hearing about team roping. I thought it was kind of new, but I guess it isn't.
It's the biggest business in the world, especially for this Wickenburg area.
But it's always been around, I guess. And maybe I just...
With the handicap system, it just promoted a lot of people wanting to go into team roping and not being intimidated by better ropers. When I was young, trying to learn to rope, you went to the arena and entered up, and whoever was there, you might be roping against world champions.
Yeah.
And
you might as well just walk in and give them your money and go home.
Yeah. We always say we should have mailed the check and taken the money.
But now it's fun, you know. So
yeah.
Jim misses it, and I still rope, so I miss him roping with me.
And then
very much so.
What drew me to Wickenburg, I don't know, you didn't ask that question yet. But
go ahead.
What drew me to Wickenburg was, well, Dixie and I both always loved Wickenburg.
My grandparents had a stake in Wickenburg, sort of, and I'll tell you about that.
The first time I came to Wickenburg, I was working for the highway department on Highway 93 over here, and it was in 1962.
Wow.
And I just always loved it since then. And we decided as soon as we could, we would move to Wickenburg.
Yeah.
We got the chance, and we came here in 1979.
And I'll give you a quick rundown on actually why. When years ago, Jim was a dental technician. He made bridge and crowns and gold teeth and stuff for dentists all over Prescott. We had a lab. So and Jim's an artist anyway. So once he was done with that, we got into the buckle business. We were in the buckle business for 32 years. We made buckles for many, many rodeos and lots of stars and everything. So, but anyway, we were doing that, and then we went to, Jim wanted to learn to be a fine engraver. So he found the best in the world, and he lived in Roseburg, Oregon. So we just packed up the family and moved there. We had nothing. We were like camping in our car almost. So Jim went to this man called George Sherwood, who was the best, and asked him to help him. And he said, well, I don't want, you know, this and that. And so Jim just showed up every day at his house. And George would let Jim stay there, but he wouldn't let him cut metal. He wouldn't do anything. And he told Jim, you want to be a good good engraver? Draw. You know, like scrolls and scrolls and scrolls. So Jim did that for a year.
You can't draw it, you can't cut it.
Right. And George finally, he wouldn't let Jim, he still never let him cut. But we finally decided that Jim was good enough that engraving, because he'd come home and do it, that we would go ahead and try to make some buckles. And so we became Championship Buckle Company, and we did buckles for 23 years, and I did all the soldering. I said, I made them. Jim made them beautiful. I was not an artist. But so that's what we did for 23 years. And when we moved to Wickenburg, we... Virtually, Jim had worked in Kingman 32 years ago. Jim had worked on a road job in Kingman just to get us started, and we moved to Wickenburg with enough money to rent a place, and Jim set up his shop in one of the bedrooms to make buckles, and we started making buckles and survived on that, and then all of a sudden, our buckle business just went crazy, and we got to move and into another bigger place and have an actual office shop, everything for buckles. So that's what we did for many, many years. So, I mean, we were ingrained in the buckle business rodeo world too, you know.
You've come at the rodeo world from so many different directions.
We have, yeah.
Tell me about your grandparents' connection to Wittenberg.
Oh, my grandparents, when I was a little girl, at, you know where the community center is in town? Mm-hmm. Used to be the Wishing Well Trailer Park.
Oh, I've seen pictures.
Mm-hmm, and my grandparents ran the trailer park.
What was their name?
Winnie and Leonard Campbell. Oh. Winnie and Leonard Campbell. And the funny part about it is, when I was a kid, now, I, you know, kids think differently, but I've asked people, but I know it's true. The river was probably 10 feet deeper, than it was is now. Because the trailer park set way above the river. I'd have to hike down to the river. And it has come up in that, you know, for all those years. And that's like, what, 50 years that it's done that, 45 years. So it's come up 10 feet. It's raised. The sand level has just raised and raised and raised. So, yeah.
When did they open the park?
I'm not sure. I just remember as a little kid that was, you know, something we always came to do. My dad actually worked at the mine for a little while. My dad was a cowboy, but my dad cowboyed when he could and raised us kids with money when he needed to. So he worked at the mine at Baghdad, so we were always in town and stuff, and Grandma and Grandpa were here at that point, you know. So,
and you said you have a Walnut Grove connection.
Yeah, my dad was, oh my goodness, you'll have to, when you read the book, you'll see what I'm talking about. My dad was virtually an orphan. He knew who his mom and dad were, but my grandma was full-blooded Indian, so my grandpa, he divorced my grandma, and because she was Indian, he took all the kids. And at that point, they gave him, you know. And then he didn't care. He threw the kids away. So my dad was a little street urchin, and he knew where one of his brothers were. His sister he never found till she was 48 years old. So it was, you know, it's quite a story. And quite a nice dad for all that he'd gone through. He wasn't like a lot of men, you know, that would just blow their family apart. But he was a good dad.
He was a good dad.
Yeah, he was. So, but anyway, so Mr. Carter, Charlie Carter, there's still Carters up there, but Charlie Carter was, my dad called him Old Man Carter. He took Daddy in, and he raised him. Mr. Carter's wife hated my dad, but Mr. Carter loved him. So he, you know, he was always his buffer between her and him. But, he was raised up there. We've got magnificent stories about how, you know, in the Hacienda, you could go and pick up gold. In those years, you know, because what would Daddy be 100 now, Jim? 99?
He was born in 17.
Yes, in 99. But he would say, you know, when they were getting ready to go to town, he would go down to the river. He would just pick up gold nuggets so he could buy him gum and cigarettes and candy and whatever he wanted. So, yeah, the Hacienda was quite. There's still a lot of gold up there, I'm sure.
He said gold was $18 an ounce.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow. Take a half ounce with him.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Something else. But anyway, yeah, it's a neat deal. But he, a lot of good stories up there. I mean, a lot of the stories are in the book too. You know, he did some fun things, some bad things. He was just a wrong kid.
Would you say the name of the book for the tape recorder?
Yeah, the name of the book is Taters, A Man Horseback.
And his name was Tatum.
Dick Tatum.
Yeah. Call him Taters.
Taters, A Man Horseback. Yeah.
Wow.
So
I'll tell you one thing that drew me, or confirmed that I wanted to live in Wickenburg. In 1980, we had just been here less than a year, and I got bucked off of a horse, team roping. And lit straight down on the top of my head and broke 6 vertebrae.
Yeah, all the vertebrae in his neck.
And the town of Wickenburg got together and did a big benefit roping for me and
took care of
did
us.
Did a lot of things
kids
for
and
us.
And
a lot of individuals that lived here were stepped up
amazing.
To the plate and helped us out. And
Jim was paralyzed from his lower lip down, since I'm on tape, lower lip down. Nothing. No hands, no feet, no nothing. He was paralyzed for 6 months.
Holy cow.
Yeah, so he was in the hospital for 6 months. So, yeah, Wickenburg is a wonderful man. It was just, this was our home. You know, it was just our home. Mm-hmm. That's all there is to it. So
that's an amazing story, and it doesn't surprise me.
Mm-mm. Not at all.
No, I mean, you know, I've only been coming here since 2003, so I have this sort of outsider's look.
Mm-hmm.
But these are the same kind of stories I've been hearing from everybody I've talked
to. That's awesome.
Yeah. It's truly remarkable.
They're good people.
Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, sure. I want to back up a little bit and tell me how you got into trick writing. Tell me about that.
My sister-in-law was actually a trick writer. And I would have done it younger, but I was a barrel racer and a team roper and stuff way before that. And when we went to Oregon for Jim to learn to engrave buckles, my sister-in-law was already a very famous trick writer. And so I just said, I want to learn to do that. So she said, fine. And I was 30 years old. So I took Jim's rope horse and went to the pen and learned to trick ride. And it was great fun. I had so much fun doing that. It was really fun.
I want to pause this for a minute.
Yeah, she would throw the horses to somebody to go on saddle. She'd hook them to the house, and she'd have dinner on the table before the cowboys got in. Wow. You know, what a lady. I miss her. She was my best friend. Wow. She was Jim's best friend, too. She really was.
Tell me more. This, we're talking about Dixie's mother.
Virginia Campbell Tatum. Uh-huh. Yep. Yeah, she was a pretty cool lady.
Raised in Prescott.
We had the recorder off. Would you say that quote again about she was more of a cowboy?
Yeah, she was my dad's best cowboy. Daddy always said she was the best cowboy he ever had. And he had some good cowboys working there, but she always did what she had to do. And there were lots of times, you know, like I just said, she would come to the house and cook the dinner. Well, a lot of times they were at a tank. You know, they had run them in and they were branding at a tank. And it was far from the house, so there would be a truck there, and my mom would just tie the horses to the fence, and she'd hook them back to the house, get her Dutch ovens and everything, and bring out, and she'd cook right there while they were branding and stuff for the guys. So, yeah, all my parents' pictures, I just haven't had time to go through them with all the stuff we've been going through lately, but I would love to go through there, because there's hundreds of pictures of the ranch, brandings, and, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. And just for the record, this is a connection that'll be strange to connect us here. You know who the Simpsons are, Simpson Ranch. Mm-hmm. My dad was their cowboy. That's the ranch I was raised on.
No way.
Yes, in between Williams and the Grand Canyon. But it was called, it was Grandma Poquette, so which is a May. Larry's grandma, a May Poquette Simpson. It was her family that owned the ranch, so it was called Poquette Cattle Company when my dad was there. Yeah.
Okay.
So there's the connections.
Together.
Yeah.
Because I've heard the Poquette name too.
Oh yes, yeah, Poquette. Yeah, it was really something. They were neat people.
Is this gone?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And Grandma Poquette, I called her Grandma Poquette. Everybody did. She taught me French. I don't remember a lot of it, but anyway, it was fun. It was a lot of fun, you know. When I was in school, I took French, so I went to her for tutoring. But anyway, it was a fun place to be raised. It really was. Yeah.
So you moved to Wickenburg in 79, mm-hmm. and then what did you do when you were here?
We made buckles.
Yeah,
you're still making. Oh, that's right.
That's when we really got into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I also got into real estate.
That was years later, thank God. That was lucrative.
I had some really good success with it for 6 years.
Mm-hmm. Was Wickenburg really growing at that time?
Were there
periods of time where it just sort of exploded?
It was one of the biggest housing booms I think they had in Wickenburg.
It was like a feeding frenzy.
I was blessed to be the top salesman in West
Maricopa County.
Maricopa, Phoenix
area.
MLS area, 3,000 agents.
Wow.
Jim sold $23 million that year right here in Wickenburg, and, you know, just close right here.
It
he didn't
wasn't
even go out.
I was very smart. It's because I was willing to work.
And we had a lot of rodeo friends that wanted here, you know, so they all called Jim, which was perfect. Yeah, so that was fun.
Wow.
That's fun.
Going back to Dixie's mom, we were best friends, her mom and I.
Oh, yeah.
And, the first official thing that happened was she is a great cook. And they were having their spring roundup the first year Dixie and I got married in 65. And I went out to quote unquote help. I was probably in the way because I had horses when I was a kid.
Oh, he became a good cowboy for my dad, but not.
But anyway, so she wanted to break me in properly, and she sat me down at the table with a bunch of cowboys, and none of them were looking at me.
Everybody was eating pancakes, just getting ready.
She put a stack of hotcakes on the plate and set them in front of me, and so I buttered them, and I poured syrup over them, and I started cutting.
With his fork.
I couldn't get it to cut, and I thought, my God, this woman's a terrible cook.
So he looks up, and nobody's looking. Everybody's just shoveling their food in.
So I got my pocket knife.
Everybody was looking, believe me.
I started cutting. I finally cut me a bite and put it in my mouth, and it was full of rubber bands.
She was the best jokester in the whole world.
Okay. You set the tone of how it's going to be between me and you. So we had this rivalry.
Oh, jokes, constant.
All those years.
Yeah. And Jim time. And my mom were so close that when my mom died, you know, she had cancer and she refused to serve, anything, you know, which was awesome because she had fun till the end. Anyway, when she realized that she needed to go, she came to Jim and asked him to take her to the hospital instead of me, you know, so, yeah. But yeah,
so
it was
special.
It is special. Yeah. That was the funnest thing. Yeah.
Another time, a bunch of rodeo cowboys came out there, and we decided we'd go deer hunting. And so everyone got a gun, shells, and Dixie's mom packed a lunch for us, and. So we take off about 5 in the morning, and about 11, we're getting pretty hungry, so we stop to eat, and we're all horseback.
And Mom made everything, her own bread and everything. It was
so easy. Homemade bread, tomatoes, lettuce, pickles, mustard, ketchup, whatever. And in place of a piece of meat. She cut a piece of leather.
So they all had to throw their leather away in
so we ate our sandwiches with no meat. So everyone said, okay, what are we going to do to get back at her when we get back to the ranch? I said, I got the perfect idea. If we go in there and put our horses up and go to the house and act like nothing happened.
That'll kill her.
And she goes, well, did you boys have a good time today? Oh, yeah, we had a good time. Well, did anything unusual happen?
No. Poor mom.
Just an uneventful day. Well, okay, what about the lunch? Was it good? And we said, oh, yeah, good, good.
Don't tell her what she said.
She says, I'll kill you.
That was the perfect revenge.
Yeah, but she was quite the lady. She, our daughter-in-law owned the Cowboy Cafe when it used to be out by Coffinger Park there.
Oh, yes.
Tina. Uh-huh. But Grandma worked for her all the time Tina was there.
Oh, no kidding.
And everyone just knew her as Grandma. Oh. She'd just walk in the room and start giving orders to all the waitresses. Everyone just kind of took it in stride. She'd always tell them, if you got time to lean, you got time to clean. And keep going.
Yeah. Our daughter-in-law owned the Cowboy Cafe here in town.
Yeah.
And then we took it over. I realized real fast I wasn't a restaurateur. I loved eating there, but I wasn't a very good manager. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. We had a lot of good times there.
They moved downtown by the statue, catty corner from the statue.
The feed company is what it was after we...
That was the Cowboy Cafe for a year and a half.
Too heavy-duty rent, no place to park. I mean, you know, it was just one thing after another.
We found out that, you know, if we could have just been the PR people...
And eat there.
Be the samplers, food quality control people, and PR. It would have been fun, but the hard part about being a restaurateur is the cooking and the cleaning.
I didn't think so. I thought the employees were the worst. Oh, you know, they don't show up for work. Oh, they've always got an excuse. And then, oh, it's just your babysitter. But that's what I called myself was.
It's not quite so bad here because this is Wickenburg.
Yeah, it's a little bit better, but it was still babysitting.
It's a little different. Mindset, don't you think?
Mm-hmm. In Wickenburg.
In Wickenburg.
Oh, very much, yes.
Yeah. Absolutely.
People have better outlook on life than they do.
When we, after we were here for a year, Jim was talking about when he broke his neck, we actually moved. We were over by the hospital on Oleander, I think is what it was called. Anyway, we moved to a place right across the street from the city park. Mm-hmm. And it was... The tennis courts, we had an arena, and we had 70 pecan trees, and the highway has taken it out since. They bought it from us. But we were there for 23 years. We got to raise our kids there.
Wow.
It was the greatest place in the world. I mean, we were like, and we still have kids nowadays that come to us and said, there wasn't any place that we'd rather be than at you guys' houses when we were kids. It's so funny. We have some kids that just moved two doors up, just bought that house, and I haven't seen them for years and years, and they told us, your house was the funnest place in Wickenburg.
Wow. Tell me again where it was. I'm trying to visualize.
Okay. Well, you know where the tennis courts are?
At Coffinger Park.
Yes.
The tennis court.
Yeah.
Ours was, well, right across the street from the tennis courts, there's a two-story house.
Okay.
And ours was to the east of that. So it would have been actually under the freeway now.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it was a neat place to raise the kids. Good place.
Oh, yeah.
Lots of fun.
Yeah.
So... Yeah.
Jim, tell me a little bit more about working for the highway department. Did you ever work with Lon McDermott?
No, I didn't know he worked for...
He told me he worked on 60, but it was before, I think it was before you did your highway work.
Yeah.
He also did...
I'll be darned.
Well,
and
I
he lived
worked
in
for...
what is now the Hacienda River Preserve, that building.
Oh, yeah.
That's
mm-hmm.
where he just basically threw a mattress on the floor and lived when he was working on 60.
Yeah. That's cool.
You know, now that you mention that, I never knew that, but I remember him back in those days.
It would have been about the same time, because it was in 1962 that you were...
I think it's a little before that.
Yeah.
But what was that like? What was that experience
well,
like?
Well, I was pretty boring work, really. I worked for the engineering department.
Mm-hmm.
And I did quality control on asphalt paving and
concrete
and soil compaction and just dirt, working in the dirt all day.
Jim said half the time he was just sitting there sleeping while he's waiting for his
But I worked for about 6 years with the highway department.
Yeah. And I was blessed not to have to work, you know. Mm-hmm. I was only 17 when Jim and I got married, so I didn't go to college. I didn't do anything. I just had kids. Got to stay home and raise them, yeah.
That's wonderful. So the kids were raised in Wickenburg.
Yeah, the two. You know, we had four kids, but we lost two of our kids.
Oh.
Yeah. And then we just lost our other son on August the 2nd. It's just...
Third.
Yeah, just amazing. But
we lost the grandson.
We lost our grandson too. It's like, gosh, what is going on? But it's funny because our little boy, our son that we lost in August, we really miss him. But you know, that kid waited for heaven because he was in the car. He was our nephew. We adopted him. But he was our nephew in the car when our other kids died. So he got the carbon monoxide too. But he fell on a fur coat, and they didn't. So they died from it, and they brought him back. And it was hard on him for years and years and years. He had to learn to speak. He had to learn to walk. He had to learn a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
But he was the best kid in the world, and he always told us, he said, he was ready to go home. He said he saw, he said, I skipped, we were holding hands, and I skipped with Connie and Brett to the light. And he said, and then somebody, and then they said, you have to go back. And this is when he was, what, 5 years old, but he was still having a hard time speaking, and he was, you know, he's still pretty screwed up mentally, and he would tell us that story. And he'd say, they get to go, and I have to go back. And he'd throw himself on the floor, and he'd bang his head on the floor. And so I can tell you, what, heaven is a place that he wanted to be. He waited. So I know he wouldn't come back if he had the opportunity, you know. Yeah. I probably wouldn't either. If I, when I get there, I'll say, sorry, I finally made it. I ain't coming back. Yeah. So, but he was a great kid. Fun times.
Wow. Well, you're so resilient about this, and I'm sure it's your faith.
It is our faith, most definitely.
And I think
I'm glad you said that.
Mm-hmm. Oh well, duh, it's kind of obvious.
Yeah,
for sure.
That brought us through every one of those difficult times.
And did we come through easily right at first? Heavens no. Heavens no. We were. I mean, I was angry after the kids died, and lots of people said, "Oh, you can't be angry with God. Want to bet?" Let me tell you what, pal, he knew what was in my head just because it didn't roll out of my mouth, and it finally rolled out of my mouth. But you know what? He was so cool. God was so cool because he was like, I've been walking beside you through this whole mess, and our hands were just a few inches apart. I was reaching my hand out to you. You were not willing to come to that other few inches. Mm-hmm. And until you were, I was just walking with you. So it was cool, you know, but yeah, it's
but
made
I like
our life
to compare
so much better.
Our faith, you know, we went through some really tough times, and there's no evidence that it's not going to happen again.
Yeah, that's the thing.
But I like to compare our time here in Wickenburg with I can remember everything but words. I like to compare it with the friendship that we have with people.
Yeah.
You always have an advocate when something happens to you in Wickenburg. Mm-hmm. It's a small enough town and people care.
Somebody's going to be praying for you, mm-hmm. you know.
You'll always
and
have
vice
an
versa.
Advocate.
Yeah.
And that's the way we are with our Father in Heaven.
Yeah. Too. And Wickenburg's a great town, you know. It just, I don't know, but yeah, resiliency comes from the Lord. There's no doubt about it, you know.
And you also both were raised with cowboy values. I mean, you always had something to plant your feet on. You knew that you were taken care of. You were raised with the code. What I think a lot of people who aren't from the West, you know, wouldn't understand, but it's a very much a set of Western values.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree.
Part of the land, and you were with families that, you know, lived far apart from each other, so you had to help each other. Mm-hmm. So that's what you grew up knowing as well.
That's exactly right.
So you guys
right.
really personify the Western experience, I think.
Thanks. That's great.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, tell me a little bit about Cody and his career. Cody Custer.
Man. And you know, this is the funniest thing because our kids, all of our kids, were very, very good at their jobs. You know, Jim Bob, our youngest son, he rode every event in rodeo. I mean, people don't realize that because he won the world in the high school association in the bronc riding.
Mm-hmm.
But he rode every event. So he won far more saddles and buckles than Cody did. It was funny. But Cody was such a good... I mean, Cody rode bareback, broncs, bulls when he was in high school. Then he zeroed in, you know, for his professionalism. Oh, I'm sorry.
The transcript will be, you know, everything.
Re-edited,
but if it's used, you know, for the website or whatever, you know, it would get edited. So it would be part of a larger
snippets.
Story. Yeah, yeah. Not the whole
but
thing.
But I mean, you blunders that I make.
Don't worry about it.
All the stupidity is going to be taken
and
out.
And then not listening to me at all. So that's all right with me. Yeah. So anyway.
Well, anyway, so
Cowboys
Cody.
Aren't extremely good communicating
either. Yeah. Anyway, so Cody went on. Cody was the only one that went on to college. He got a scholarship, a full ride scholarship for rodeo, and he went to, well, I guess Jim Bob went too, yeah. didn't he, for a little bit, but then he went and got married. But anyway, Cody went to CAC, and he was Central Arizona College.
Oh, okay.
It's down by Casa Grande, Gila Bend, you know, in that area. But anyway, so he goes down there, and Jim said, well, you might have got a full ride, and it's paid for, but he said, you know, I'll send you a little bit of money, but you're going to get a job on campus. So he was a mailman. So he did his rodeo. He was a mailman, and he was there for 6 months, and he called Jim, and he said, Dad, I'm going to quit school. And Jim said, well, I'm not going to tell you you can't, but it better be a really good reason. And he said, well, I'll tell you what. I'm in the dorm with three other guys. I'm trying to study. I'm trying to be good. And is all they do is drink. And now I'm drinking with them. I think I'm learning to be an alcoholic, and I want out of here. And Jim said, pack your stuff. We'll be there in the morning. I got to stop this for a second. See the baby quail? The teensy, beansy, beansy ones. Just keep watching movement right out there by that tree. See them? The mama and dad there?
Oh, yeah.
They're so tiny. You can't really see them.
We have them in California, too.
They're about this big around.
Oh, look at
them. I love them. They're so sweet. Sorry, I missed the tape.
I love the desert lifestyle.
Yeah, so we went and got Cody, and he went on the rodeo trail from that point on, mm-hmm. and he just excelled. I mean, he was just zeroed in on what he did, and he went on won many championships, and then won the world, and then him and his boys, his friends, started the PBR. Went on with that. And he's still involved with the PBR, obviously, because he goes, you see him on TV. I always laugh. Everybody says, did you see Cody? Which one is Cody on TV? I said, he's the one in the arena with his arms folded watching everything, because that's what he's supposed to be doing, is eye and what everybody's doing. So you can see him. But, yeah, that's what he's done. Yeah.
And so successive generations of your family have stayed with rodeo, then?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, and the grandkids as well?
Yeah, definitely. Brett, Cody's youngest, is a bull rider. He's going on, and Cody's boy, Aaron.
His daughter, barrel race.
Yeah, she's in college to be a teacher, though. She's kind of out of the rodeo world right now. But Aaron, he was the one that was, Aaron's the son that died. Mm-hmm. He was in college. He just got his scholarship and was in college, but he was quite a roper. Ooh, mm-hmm. He was such a good roper. We really expected to be watching him at the NFR, but. Guess God had other plans for that one, so yeah.
What does rodeo mean to the two of you?
Mostly a memory now. But.
Yeah. Rodeo changed when we were rodeoing. Rodeo was kind of rough business and too much drinking and too much. You know, they stayed in one town for 3 or 4 or 5 days, and all they did was drink. You know. So that's changed heavily. And then when that got to where, like, Cody rodeo on, they would ride and get on a plane and head for another rodeo, you know, so they didn't have time to be drunk.
That era of kids mm-hmm. were taught by people like us that tried to just mm-hmm. do rodeo as a fun activity, and they started treating it like a business, and they really started making some money then.
Yeah.
But yeah,
rodeo to me was family. I mean, when we were going with the kids, we spent every dime we ever had. We were the brokest people in the world, drove an old ugly motor home and took our kids to every single rodeo there was, and we spent every dime. But we were always together. You know, it wasn't like the kids went off rodeoing and Jim and I went to the bar or we went here and there. Never. It was always all of us. Yeah. Yeah. Always. So, yeah, we had to wait till they were gone before we ever gained anything.
It's evolving now into even more funds available there for people.
Oh, yeah. The business, you mean, of rodeo? Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a business now.
It is. You know, just in the little bit that, you know, I was involved with it or watched it a lot when I was a kid, I see how mm-hmm. different it is now.
Mm-hmm.
So, when did you get out of the buckle business?
Gosh, we were in for 23 years.
Are you retired?
After I went into real estate in 2001,
I sold it
to a couple of guys that worked for us.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Dallas and Dustin McGee.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. and they're team ropers. They live here.
Congress.
In the winter time.
But see, when Jim broke his neck, Jim was not able to engrave for quite some time. He got back into it a little bit, but we got a lot of reservation Indian boys work for us. But I was like, I guess I was raised tough enough to know I could do anything, whether I could do it or not, you know? And so when Jim broke his neck, it was like, here we were. And I said, we were driving around one day after he came home because he was crippled. He was in the car and he liked to drive around town. And we drove by that place down by the park. And Sharon Simpson was tacking a sign. She was a realtor. She was tacking a sign in the yard. And I said, let's go see about buying that house. And he said, are you out of your mind? He said, I'm paralyzed. We have no means of support. And you want to buy a house? We can't do it, Dixie. And I said, we'll see. Me and my meanness. Well, long story short, we had a very good friend that was the president of Maribank, and his kids rodeoed. They were all rodeoed together, so, and they were always there too. So I called him and I said, Gene, I said, you know the situation. I got nothing. Got a crippled husband. He can't work, but I'm going to guarantee you I can. And I said, you know what, Gene, I would like to buy this house for us because we need a place where I can, you know, take care of Jim. And I will work two jobs and I will scrub floors before I let your payment go. And he said, okay, go to the bank here in Wickenburg. And he said, tell them that I said for you that you don't have to fill out a credit app. They'll already know. I'll call. So I went in there. There's no credit app. They just wrote out the loan, the deal for me, and made me feel so sad almost because the manager of this branch, he said, oh, I hope someday I get to meet Mr. Rice, who was the president of Maribank, and I felt about this thing because here I was going in there with a loan from his word, you know, because we were friends. But that was me. I was like, I'm going to make this work. And so then I had never engraved. I had never soldered. I had never been in anything, you know, in the buckle business. Jim's helped, you know, like a doctor handing tools. I started making buckles, and I made every buckle that went out of that place from then on. And I soldered it, and I became a cutter, in my own opinion, a good cutter, because with the cutting, it's a little bitty saw that you have to feel whether the blades are going up or down. And you cut out things so tiny. You cut them out so tiny that you know they're drawn on there, and you just have to follow the lines. And so I did that. I said, you know what? We're going to survive. And we did. Yeah. So I was just raised that way, I guess. Mm-hmm. Do what you have to do.
Yes, you do.
Yeah.
Tell me about the Indian reservation Indian people that worked with
you.
Oh,
the Navajos. We knew Navajos. Jim and I rodeoed on the Navajo reservation. Yeah, that's a story in itself. Oh. You should have seen when they announced our name up there. They would say,
"Oh my God,
Jim Custer," and then the announcer would say something in Navajo, and everybody in the crowd would just die laughing.
We can imagine what they said.
We didn't know. They're good. A lot of them are good people. They have a lot of drinking problem, but a lot of them are really good people. So we have lots of friends still up there, you know.
They're just naturally, it seems like they're just natural born artists.
Mm-hmm.
And you could teach them things like
mm-hmm.
engraving. I could show them how to lay out a scroll and how to make the mm-hmm. cuts. The next day they'd be doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did they work for you here in Wickenburg?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where did they come from? I mean,
Tuba City.
Loop.
Oh, they stayed down here during the week. Half of them stayed at the house. I don't even know.
Did you advertise? I mean, this is fascinating.
No, we just knew them. When Jim and I owned an arena and an RV park in Flagstaff in 1972.
Yeah.
And some of these kids, we even still have pictures of them at the arena when they were little kids, you know. And then they grew up to be big kids, and we still knew them, and they knew that we made buckles, and they would come to see if they could get a job, and, you know, so.
So they stayed in town, they'd either stay with you, or did they?
They get motel or whatever, yeah.
Were there ever any issues with Wickenburg residents about?
Oh, no, everybody loved the kids, and they roped, the kids roped with all the guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's one thing I've learned in a lot of these interviews as well, is that there are also Hispanic families in town that have been here forever, and everybody went to school together.
Oh, yeah.
And that sort of ethnic dissension, or whatever they'd call it, it just didn't happen.
But, you know, we don't have, I mean, I know that some parts of Arizona have, I'm definitely not a racist person, but if you want to call me racist, I'm racist against gangs. Where they think we owe them something. Excuse me. Getting along together is perfect. That's the way it should be, because everybody's people. I don't care what color they are, but if they want to think either group think they're better than the other ones, that's not right. But so, Wickenburg's cool for that. Yeah.
And so everybody just, they hung out in Wickenburg, worked for you, when they stopped working for you, did they go on to other careers?
They went on to other buckle businesses, some of them. And
oh, that's another natural trait to have, their wanderers.
Yeah.
You get them there to work, and some of them just take to it and stick with you, mm-hmm. and some of them would just be gone. They'd get their first paycheck, and they'd be gone.
And they had, many of them had drinking problems, even the kids that worked for us. And very sad, because one of our favorite kids, and we still just love him to death, and we still talk to him once in a while, and he went to prison twice over his drinking, But we love him. He's a good kid, Edward. Yeah, so anyway,
Do you remember some of the names of the guys that worked with you?
Edward Lewis, Benny Carejo, what was the guy and his wife? Yazzie, what was their first name? I don't even remember.
Leonard Yazzie.
Yeah. Anyway, there was a husband and wife that worked for us, too. So, there was many of them. And then the funny part about it is you could ask half the kids in this town, because when you're making buckles, you have one room, and ours was a basement under our shop, and it was the buffing room. Oh, my gosh. If you went in there, the buffing stuff, because we didn't have the vacuums, like they have nowadays to take the dust away. The kids would wear masks and stuff stuck to the wall, but that was the buffing room, and we still have kids come up to us and say, remember when I worked in your buffing department? High school kids, they'd want money for a while, and we had a couple of them that were such good workers that Jim had to fire them every once in a while because they got ahead of us. They were so good. Anyway, it was fun, because it was more like a family, I think, because half the kids in this town worked in the buffing business, and I don't know, that we had a huge trampoline at our house. There was always 50 kids on the trampoline. I don't know. It was just that way, Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'd wake up in the morning, I wouldn't know. We had all boys, which was good, we had bunk beds. We had a huge bedroom. We had bunk beds on the walls because we knew there was always somebody standing. There'd be kids on the floor Like Cody would come through with some of his rodeo buddies on our way to our rodeo.
Two carloads of them.
We'd wake up in the morning and there'd be kids all over the place. So.
And they'd all want breakfast, right?
Yeah. Well, I was the waffle queen, let me tell you what. I'm still the waffle queen. Everybody wants my waffles.
I remember one time we were at Cheyenne Rodeo and the Budweiser Clydesdales were there, the team, and Lloyd Ferguson was the leader of one of the teams, and he said, how much dough do you have for making waffles?
He said, whatever you want, buddy.
I got about six boxes of Bisquick back here. I can make how many you want. He says,
just keep them coming.
You can make.
Keep them coming.
And then, so it got to be a big joke around there. He said, I can eat 100 waffles.
Well, he didn't eat that many, but he ate all of them.
Everyone started taking bets.
That's horrible. I cooked for two solid hours.
I think he used up all of the Bisquick. Yeah.
And then at every rodeo, if the Budweiser crew was there, I knew that I better buy some more Bisquick, because Lloyd and his crew were always coming to the plate to the motorhome for waffles. That was fun. And I'm still, everybody still says, you still make those good waffles? Yeah, if I have to.
So do you still see a lot of people from your old world and your previous lives?
Yeah, like we're the ones that are my age. Now they're starting to die of old age.
Yeah, isn't that the
truth? And so I feel really blessed every day that I get up and I'm still breathing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's true. See, Jim's birthday's on the 23rd. He'll be 77 on the 23rd of this month.
Yeah.
Happy birthday.
Yeah. So.
Thank you.
So we're going to Tucson for a big birthday party for one of our extra children, Jeff Wood. He turns 50, and he said, I'm having my 50th birthday party. Will you guys come down? And Jim said, sure, what day? And he said, the 23rd. And Jim said, well, that's my birthday. And I said, okay, it's a double party.
Yay!
So we're going down to have a double party.
Oh, we still stay close to a lot.
We do stay close to a lot of the kids. Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Definitely. Yeah. And a lot of them call us mom and dad. We went to Cody put on a memorial bull riding school down at Cave Creek for our son Danny, you know, that died in. And, I mean, you can't imagine the kids that came out of the woodwork. I still call them kids. They're 45 and 50, but friends, you know, just kids that were always with our kids, always at our house. It was just like, and everybody there was like, hey, mom, hey, dad. So it's been, it is fun. But that's what rodeo did for us. I think we must have helped a lot of kids because we've got two little girls. Because my little sister lived at the house, lived next door with my mom and dad. And there were two girls that would come to the house all the time. And I thought they came, you know, just because of Jolanda, which they might have because they were best friends. But we find out, even now, we just found out one, that their dad beat them so bad they would come to our house to hide. We didn't know that. Mm-hmm. So I guess our house was kind of a sanctuary without us even knowing it, you know. It's just a fun place to be, I guess, to us. So,
well,
yeah.
How great you were there for them.
Oh, I thought so, too. I said, you've got to be kidding. I had no idea. And they said, oh, I know you didn't. So, yeah. Yeah, it's a fun place. Fun town.
Yeah. And I thought of a question I wanted to go back. You said your sister-in-law. Was it Trick Rider? What was her name?
Vicki Christensen. And you know Christensen Brothers Stock Contractors.
Oh.
They did all the Northern California rodeos forever. CB is what it was.
CB Rodeo
Contractors, Rodeo Company. Yeah, but it was Christensen Brothers.
Oh.
And yeah, that's a very famous. They had some of the most famous horses there ever was, like
War Paint.
Was a Bronc. Shoot, what was some of the other ones?
I can't think right now.
But yeah, Vicki Christensen. She married my brother Danny Tatum. So.
Oh, well, that's my cousin.
Yeah. I'm sure they would know who they are, definitely.
Huh.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. You now live in Congress. How long have you been out here?
We've been out here 3 years. We had a project going out here, and we had a house built in Vista Royale, and we loved it. It was beautiful, and we were there 10 years, and then Jim broke his neck, and because we were in the real estate business, we went and bought a lot of land, you know, and put ourselves in a little bit of a position not to be able to keep the monster house, which was probably better looking back, you know. But anyway, so we sold, and then we moved into our son's house in town because he had moved to Oklahoma, and it was empty. So, and Jim had it up for sale. Well, Jim, the good salesman, sold it out from under us, and I was like, what are we going to do? He said, well, we're working on our project in Congress. Let's go look around Congress. So we drove around one day, and we came across this place, and there was a sign in there, and it was obviously a foreclosure because it was horrible when we saw it. It had cactuses clear to the roof out front. You could not even see the house. Cactuses all around the back. And we were like, oh, my gosh. Jim said, well, it's not going to hurt to look at it. We'll sell it to somebody else if we don't like it. So we walk in, and we're like, I don't like it. It's had holes in the wall and pink carpet with burnt cigarettes and everything, and it was just gross. And so Jim and I looked at each other and looked around, and we went, it's really got some potential. It's a nice, wide-open area. You know, I love that.
Yeah.
And so I said, well, let's go make an offer. So we made a ridiculous offer, $27,000, which was ridiculous, but... Anyway, we ended up getting it for $39,000, and then we put $25,000 in it, fixing it up, and it's darling. It's just right for us, you know?
It's beautiful.
Yeah. We had a blast doing it. It was fun.
Working on the outside now.
Yeah, the outside. With the walk, the porches, you know, we just had one little bitty, and with Jim on a walker and stuff, so we've been pouring concrete and stuff and getting it out there and fenced in the yard, but Yeah, it's always something. There's always a project.
Well, you know what? That keeps you young.
It does, yeah. It absolutely does.
I sure hope so.
Oh, yeah, I can see it.
Yeah, for sure. But well, I don't know. I was just trying to think of other things that about Wickenburg, you know, that Box Canyon, our favorite place.
Really?
Box Canyon. Has anybody else told you about Box
Canyon? I've been there.
Yeah.
Oh. It's so beautiful.
When we lived down there on the river, we were always in the Jeep up at Box Canyon every chance we got. And we were also flooded out 3 times in the middle of the night.
Eek.
Yeah. Yeah. So we had to, you know, a couple of times we were able to pull horses out. One time it came so fast, I just had to tie gates back and let the horses swim and get in the car and get out. You know, so
when you were down there up where the wishing well was?
Yeah. Well, we were at the park, you know. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, at the park. Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh.
Because both Saul's Wash and the river come up together and it flooded backwards. So
I've seen photos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure you have.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Terrible.
We watched a house go down there one day and watched it beat against the bridge until it finally broke to shreds. Whoa. And then they closed the bridge so they could check it and see if it was still intact.
I was in town last July when they had that ginormous storm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was something.
Interesting. And then, of course, the D.C. ride is one of our favorite things.
Almost got up into that new arena down there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the new arena in the river is a worrisome thing. But
I've seen that under 4 feet of water right there.
Oh, my
gosh. Oh, easily, yeah.
Wow. But so you just mentioned the D.C. ride.
I love the D.C. ride.
Tell me.
I love to watch the guys go out. Uh-huh. It's the funniest thing in the world because they're all dressed up. They're all duded up. They're all happy. They're just, you know, man, they're trotting out of town, cocky-walky, and come back in, and they're like, they've been on that long ride, and they were drunk most of the time, so they're just, they come back in pretty rough.
I don't say that.
Well, I don't. It's fun, though. That's the fun part about it. You send them out, and you wave them, and then you come back in, you go, and they're going, waving. But DC's always fun to watch. And I don't know. Wickenburg's got a ton of stuff that's fun. They just keep going, you know, keep things happening.
When I came here in 62, I joined the volunteer fire department.
Right.
And that was interesting because they had like George and Junior Herskowitz.
Mm-hmm. Herskowitz is
Mac there. Dowdy and Chester Davis was the chief and I know I missed a bunch of them, but those guys were all still here when I moved back, when we moved back in 79. It was kind of like welcome home.
Wow. Oh, that's lovely. So you weren't moving in around strangers then?
No, not really.
Not really, no.
You know what's funny? I was thinking you were talking about somebody being like the Indian boys being rounders or whatever you call them, gypsies or whatever you say. And I thought about it. You know, really, Jim and I have talked about this so many times. It's funny that, you know, you talk about our faith. Jim and I look at our faith as being God knew hit the will, even if we didn't want it, and we were like, no, you know. But anyway, when we moved to Wickenburg, we had moved many, many times, and we'd only been married 15 years because Jim was on construction. He was on movies. It was like, yeah, we were, I considered it, we were like gypsies. And we look back now and say, the only way that God was going to plan us to be able to raise our boys decently was for Jim to break his neck. Because with Jim being able and to move again, to go to another job, we would have, you know, because that's just what a wife does, and follow their husband. But that was our planting. I told Jim, God planted us here through your broken neck, and the people watered us. And our family grew. And I always tell people, Wickenburg raised our family. You know, Wickenburg raised our family. That's just the way it was. So
that's lovely.
Yeah. So that's just another tidbit. Little tidbit.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, and we also got to return the favor. Not me, but my sons. Mm-hmm. They've been to thousands of rodeos all over the country. And they announce Okay, our next cowboy coming from Wickenburg, Arizona.
Yeah, so it became a household word almost. Yeah.
People go, where's Wickenburg?
Now everybody's like, oh, I know where Wickenburg is. Yeah.
That's true.
And there were some other, quite a few other people from here that rodeoed too, like Russ and Mary Dolvin and the...
They are sweet.
Underdowns,
mm-hmm.
They rodeo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Gloria and her two daughters,
mm-hmm.
They rodeo. I, of course, yeah. Everett Bowman, but
yeah,
not many sure. People remember Everett.
Jim and I remember
Everett.
Oh, tell me about Everett Bowman.
Oh, sweet man.
He had hands that were three times as big as mine. And he owned Bowman's Barn, you know, where they...
I have heard so many stories about Bowman's Barn.
Okay,
on this
trip. Well,
oh,
as a kid from Prescott, you know, I didn't know Everett Bowman. I'd heard his name. But I went to the barn dance there one night. And Everett, I was carousing around there. Almost getting in a fist fight with somebody, and Everett come over and he put that great big old hand on my shoulder and he goes, well, I'd like to recommend that you don't pursue this.
Jim was like, recommendation taken.
No, I just kind of still went on with it a little bit, and he come walking over to me that time. He said, I know you're having fun, but I highly recommend that you stop.
He was a very calm, nice man.
He squeezed my shoulder, and I thought, you know, I might ought to stop.
Yeah. I remember going to Bowman's Barn when I was.
And he just laughed about it.
Yeah.
I saw him a week later, and he thought it was pretty funny.
He was a nice man, though. He really was. But he didn't take any
junk.
Oh,
yeah.
He ruled the roost at his dances, and people had fun because of it, you know.
Yeah. I've heard stories about Bowman's Barn from so many people during this project.
Fun.
Later years, I played music there.
Mm-hmm.
What did you play?
Guitar and thing. There's a picture of my band up there.
Uh-uh. Oh my gosh. I'm getting up to look at the picture. Look at this. Wow.
Many years ago, obviously.
And that's another thing about Wickenburg. That guy that's playing lead guitar there, mm-hmm. His name's Jim Monette. He had the band called the Arizona Outlaws.
Yeah,
I joined up with him. But
he still lives here?
His son, yeah, he still lives here. In Congress, actually.
Really?
But his son, Danny, is a fine musician, and I'm real close to him.
One of the best guitar players there is, I think. Ooh.
How do you spell the last name?
M-O-N-N-E-T-T.
And what was the dad? What was his name?
Jim.
Jim, okay. Huh. Wow.
Chasing your tail, are you?
Danny's another one that came down to our place all the time and roped, and we taught him to rope, and we taught him a few other things about life.
Just different kids, yeah. Well, actually...
But he's still a good friend.
He's a very good friend. He's a very, very good friend, and he's a Christian now, too, and he said Jim saved his life because he was drinking a quart of, whiskey is what comes in, but whatever it was, he was drinking one every day.
Eek.
Yeah. And Jim just loved him through it, you know, said, you know, I don't do that stuff, but it doesn't mean I don't love you. Danny said, he told us not too long ago, he said, you know what, you guys are the ones that saved my life because you didn't belittle me. You didn't tell me that I was trash, which I probably was, but you never said. He said, but good person. Good guy. But yeah, that's Wickenburg. That's the way it is, you know. I don't know. I love Wickenburg. You know everybody on the street, you know. Well, it's getting more so that you don't know, but probably because we're getting old, you know. We used to know everybody on the street. Prescott was that way, too, when we were kids. People would come up and rap you on the head and say, would you like to report to your mom what you're doing? I'm like, who are you? Well, that doesn't matter. You want me to report to your mom? No. So, yeah, that's the way that one went. But Wickenburg was kind of that way when we first moved here. Everybody knew everybody.
Yeah.
But, gosh, I don't know what else there is, you know?
That sounds like a good place to stop, unless you've got any other great stories for me.
We could go on forever. I'm writing a book.
Are you really?
Yeah. I'm slow going because one of my computers went down and lost the manuscript.
I'm a writer. That's the worst.
It wasn't half finished, but it was in good shape. Jim Carson Thomas, do you want to take this?
Oh, go ahead.
I'm not necessarily a preacher or anything, but I'm just, my deal, the book is called Profile of a Family Tested, and if ours hasn't been tested, I don't know who the heck has. So, you know, but just stories of our lives and who fed into our lives to give us the strength, you know, because we think, we look back and we've had so many, I've got aunts and uncles that were really not my aunts and uncles, and I didn't know it till I was grown. Mm-hmm. You know, So lots of stuff like that, and just talking about stuff, you know, just stuff. So, but with all of this crud going down that we've had, I virtually quit writing anyway, because I need quiet time. I can't, my brain doesn't compute when I can't just think. And my funny with me, I don't know how to write a book, but I just started in one spot, and then I would just stop for a while and sort of stargaze, and I'd think of something that happened in Alaska, and I had a chapter, Alaska, and I'd go over there and I'd throw it in, whether it was even in line or where, you know, I was just back and forth all over the place, and then Jim broke his neck, and I was really back and forth all over, I mean, his back. The back was the bad one that's really been tough.
Yeah. So.
But I have gone to real estate school since, too. I haven't done my testing, but I've gone to school, so we can at least keep the real estate, you know, sell one or two somethings a year.
Oh, I got my license.
Yeah, Jim still has his license.
Oh, that's smart.
Can't write.
I know lots of
realtors that can't read.
What did Carson want?
Just checking on me.
I see.
Okay. Yeah. Well, on that note, I'm going to turn this off. Okay. And thank you both very much.
Thank you.
You've made my morning.
Well, it was fun.
We had fun.